You know, sometimes God has such a wonderful humor. While I was in meditation, I heard the theme song from Golden Girls. You know, where the part that says, "Thank you for being my friend, down the road and back again." I thought, wow, that's really apropos. So turn to somebody and say, "Thank you for being a friend." Yes. Down the road and back again. Yes. Thank you all for being a friend and my friend. Down the road and back again. Because where would we be if we had to travel this road without a good friend, right? Yeah. I love the Golden Girls because they were true friends, because they could say anything and pretty much do anything. But guess what? They were always, in the end, they were there for one another, right? Thank you for being a friend. Down the road and back again. Wow. Made me think of the Spirit of God when I was listening to the choir sing those songs. And somehow my heart was just moved and opened, and I just kept thinking about the one friend, the one presence, and the one power that I can always rely upon, always count on, is ever present with me. Down the road and back again. Because I've been down the road, and I've come back again, and had to go, what, down the road again? A few times. But I'm thinking every time I do that, I never walk alone. I'm always there with the presence of God. No matter how many times I got to go down that same road, that I know I should perhaps maybe take a different road, right? A new road. You know that joke about walking down the road and there's a hole in the road? Eventually you figure out, I need to just get on a new road. But I'm just so grateful, because no matter how many times I travel down a particular road, eventually I will have an awakening. Now, you know, it could be a 2x4 awakening, falling in the hole, you know, awakening. But eventually, when I do awaken, or as the prodigal son says, when I come to myself, because it says he came to himself, he had a realization, you know what, in my father's house, woo, life was much better. So he returns. And thank God we can always return to that presence. And that the presence that creates the universe is also that very same presence that welcomes us back every time we come. Not only are we welcomed back, but we might be given a fatted calf and have a party and get a new robe and a ring and some new sandals and, you know, just received with such love. That's beautiful. Because we all need that from time to time in our lives. And I was thinking that there are two things outside of our standard need for survival, or our survival needs, like food, shelter, clothing. We all need that. That's a given. But there are two things outside of the standard needs for survival that we really can't do without. And I believe that that's family and friends. Family and friends. And I say family because none of us would be here without some kind of a connection to family. Now, I'm not talking about whether we like our family, whether we think that, you know, whether or not we welcome them in our lives, or whether our connection and relationship to our great familiar is what we would have it be. It doesn't matter. Because the truth of the matter is that you were brought here through some kind of creation, some kind of union between a mother, a man and a woman. I won't even say a mother and a father, because they do become your mother and father. And so it's not a matter of the quality, but this fact that we come from a connection to the sacred other. I'm not talking about whether we like the other or not. But we learn to understand that we come here and we have a foundation that is born out of our physical creation through our mother and our father. And the fact that we're here really does help to underscore the fact that family is a part of who we are, whether you have living members right now or you don't have living members. Familia, the familia, is a part of your creation, right? And so we hunger for, even if it's not our family, we hunger for what? The familia. We hunger for that divine connection, which then moves us into this sense of having friends, right? We have friends because it's been said this, that no, there is no wilderness like a life without friends. Friendship multiplies blessings and minimizes misfortunes. It is a unique remedy against adversity, and it soothes the soul. See, having friends in our lives makes our lives richer, because without friends, we would really feel a sense of being bereft of joy. There would be a hole in the spirit. There would be perhaps a sense of emptiness or lack of connection. Family, the familiar, is fine, but it is that familiar that causes us to feel that we want to have connection. We need people in our lives to survive. We need them. You know, what's the song? Is it Hezekiah Walker who says, "I need you to survive"? I need you, he says. You need me. We're all a part of God's family. I need you. I don't have to like you or not, but I need you. Because my survival depends upon my willingness to feel that familiar, that connection. I need a friend. I was thinking, even if, suppose you were stranded on an island with your enemy, just you and your enemy, and there was no prospect of you getting off the island, and it's just you and your enemy. After a while, what do you suppose would happen? Your enemy would become your friend. Your enemy would become your friend. Why? Because we would actually crave some kind of connection, right? Some kind of connection to another. We would long for the ability to relate to something and another. You remember the film, what was it, Wilson, or what was that? What was it, where Tom Hanks had a relationship with the soccer ball, right? Even if there were no person, we would find something, because there's something in our spirit that craves divine connection and the ability to relate to someone or something. Someone said that nothing ever exists entirely alone. Everything is in relationship to everything else. See, that's what we forget sometimes. You know, that we're not, you can't do this thing called life alone. You must be in relationship to something, be it a soccer ball, your enemy, whatever. And we're always in relationship, because this is how I believe that the divine presence of God created us. This is a part of our spiritual DNA and our spiritual makeup, right? Now, our first connection, this desire, this craving to be connected, our first connection, of course, comes from our connection to the divine, to God, because we are fashioned by and created through this presence of God, right? And so we may not be aware of it when we actually come into the physical plane, but our nature, our creative DNA has within it this quality, this desire to connect and be connected. Because that's how we find our way back to God, by the way. Right? But somehow or another, our body and our soul cry out for nourishment. We can't come into the world without the physical body being nourished, right? And at the same time, we can't come into the world without our our emotional and psychological and spiritual needs also being fed. Because think about it, both are needed for us to survive and to thrive. When babies come into the world, and this has been proven, right? That babies, of course, they need the physical nourishment to survive with the body, but they also need what? They need psychological, social, emotional. They need to also be connected, to be held, to be touched, to be comforted. They need to feel the presence of another life soul, because without that, they do not thrive, right? Without that, they also may develop disassociative tendencies. And so this is a part of our ability to be in relationship is a God thing. It's the way God intended it for us to be. It's for our own inner well-being, for our spiritual psyche and makeup. And so this connection that we seek, albeit sometimes we seek it in all the wrong places, right? Because we're unaware of this divine connection that is trying to grab our attention. So the fact that we have to be in relationship in order for the soul and the spirit to thrive and to grow and to survive, then we need to look at the quality of our relationships. So I'm going to ask you to first start with your quality in relationship to God. What is your relationship to the divine, to God? Is it a casual one? You know, like God is just simply an acquaintance? Or is there a deep, abiding connection? Is there, like, God is a relative? See, because God is your relative. Right? You are a what? Child of God. There is a relative that is present, which means there is also a relationship that is natural and seeking to come forth. Do you see God as your friend? Or is God an enemy? God something to be feared? Do you seek that presence often? Or like I said, is it just a casual thing when you need something? Because we all have those kind of friends too, right? They just show up when they need something. Right? Are you that kind of a friend to the divine? Or are you a willing, abiding presence, familiar with the divine? Is God your familiar? Or just a passing acquaintance? And so understanding this is so crucial for us, because without recognizing that our first connection, people say that your first relationship is with your mother and father because you were created in the physical presence, you know, of your mother's womb and through your father's seed, but your first connection is through God, right? And so if we don't have an understanding of our spiritual connection to God as our familiar, we will go, because this innate craving for connection is placed within the psyche and the soul, we will go out looking and searching for what? The connection, a relationship to something or someone. Right? And so what we want to do is to recognize, let's start within. Before you go looking out here, start within. Build up the connection with God from within. Because when you start with this connection, this relationship, then you're going to be guided from on high, and you'll be guided from within. From on high and from within. Somebody say on high and from within. That's where we want our guidance to come from. Now, let me say this, because you've heard this probably before about being in relationship. And the phrase says that every encounter is a holy one. Have you heard that? Every encounter we have is a holy one. So I'm not even talking about whether I consider you my friend or whether I consider you a relative. Even if I just happen to encounter you, somehow that encounter is a holy one. That is a holy one because it has the clarity to bless you, and it also has the ability to teach you. Every encounter has the ability to bless you and or to what? To teach you something. Something about yourself. Every encounter. Whether I'm speeding, trying to get to church, on the rain, you know, rainy day, and somebody is moving too slowly, and that encounter is teaching me about what? Myself. Right? About a quality of being, patience or whatever, that I might be in need of. Now, I could project it out here and keep it on them. They're too slow. They don't know where they're going. I could do all of that. But that encounter is a holy one because it is trying to teach me something about myself and where I am. You see, encounters, whether they are familiar, friends, family, they will show you where you are in your consciousness. They will show you your character. They will show you areas of needed growth. They will show you your level of spiritual aptitude. Because some of us feel that we are more spiritually evolved than we really are. And your relationships and your encounters are going to show you just where you are on that spectrum, right? They're going to show you your level of grounding. Are you grounded and rooted, or are you way off here someplace? These encounters will show you your psychological and your emotional level, whether it's a healthy level. They'll show you your level of maturity or lack thereof, right? So this is very important. This is why it is a holy encounter, because every encounter is holy because it mirrors who you are. It shows you who you are. Some encounters are going to show our kind and elevated sides. And some encounters are going to show us our less than kind and lower vibrational sides, perhaps even our negative side. Some encounters are going to lift our spirits, and others are going to trigger our weaknesses. But they're holy nonetheless. Whatever it is, the key is to be aware of this encounter, what is happening in this relationship, in this encounter, because the key for us is to be aware of what is taking place within us. When I have this holy encounter, be it shopping in the supermarket with my cart and somebody bumps into me, or whether I'm driving, or whether it's my boss who fails to recognize how wonderful I am, whatever it is, it's really showing me what something about me. And so I need to figure out, where is my consciousness in this encounter, especially the quality of my consciousness, the quality of my thoughts. What is it that I'm feeling? You know, what's my emotional intelligence, my quotient at this point? You know, am I hurt? Am I experiencing anger? What's my temperament? Am I jealous? Am I feeling insecure? Am I happy? Or, you know, am I content? Am I motivated and spurred on to do great things? Am I feeling secure in this relationship? Whatever it is, tune in, because when we become aware of this holy encounter, this that is helping you to be aware of your inner state, when you become aware of what's taking place within you, then you can choose. You're at the point of choice. You can choose to change your sense of being in the midst of the encounter, or you can amplify it. You know, if it's something good, you can create more of it, give more light, more goodness. You can change, you can do whatever. That is this blessed gift that we have as children of the Most High. And when we're able to do that, when we're able to see ourselves in the midst of it, and we then choose how we want to be, to change it or to amplify it, we do, our connections and our relationships are all the better for it, because they have an opportunity to unfold in a manner that is for the highest good of all concern, right? Especially ourselves, when I can remember to be conscious. Relationships of any kind, parent, child, employee, neighbor, stranger. But relationships of any kind are great until they aren't. And when they aren't, then we begin to label them or see them as challenges. They're challenging. This relationship is challenging. Anybody here have any challenging people in your life? We all do from time to time. But I began to think about it. What makes challenging people challenging? And as I began to think about it, I said, well, I may find them challenging because they may not be doing or behaving in a manner that I like, or in a manner that I feel comfortable with, or in a manner that I feel is appropriate, or in a manner that I would want them to, right? Or maybe they're challenging because they are carrying thoughts and energies that I find taxing. They are a vexation to my spirit, right? Or maybe I find them challenging because they may not be meeting a particular need of mine, right? Or maybe they're weighing me down on some level as opposed to what? Lifting me up. Someone said people could either be a weight or they have wings. Either they weigh you down or they lift you up, right? They either spur you on or maybe cause you to stay where you are. And so when I was listening to all these things about why I think what makes somebody challenging to me, and I recognized, even though the activity or the behavior of the other person may be what I deem challenging, the experiencing of the challenge occurs where? Within me. I'm the one who's getting upset. I'm disturbed, right? I feel vexed. I'm hurt. I'm happy. Whatever it is, it's happening within me. And so it's like, wow, if this is challenging, what is it? Because it doesn't mean that they're not doing certain things. But the experience of what they're doing is up to me. I'm the one that's being affected inwardly. So the question then becomes, what am I going to do about it? Not what am I going to do about them, but what am I going to do about what? Me. Because I'm the one having the experience. Now, I may project it out and think that they're the cause of it. That's a whole nother talk between that. But even if you think they're the cause of it, the effect is happening where? In here. You're still experiencing the effect of whatever you think is the cause. So what am I going to do about, not them, but what am I going to do about me? How do I want to respond? How do I want to act? What choices do I need to make and do I want to make at this point? How do I need to or want to change my inner state? Is this a good state that I want to be in or do I need to change it? What about my behavior? How do I want to change? Do I want to be patient with the person who's doing that or do I want to continue to growl and grovel my way through? How do I want to be? What's the higher way for me to be? So the question might be, what do I want to do that will allow me to take the higher road? What is it that will allow me maybe to even offer forgiveness for this imperfect experience and challenge in person? What is it that I might want to be? Or what is it that I'm willing to surrender to understanding rather than the need for me to be understood? What is it that I want to do? Now, you may come up with the thought that, well, you know what? I don't want to take the higher road. I don't want to offer forgiveness. I don't want to be the understanding one. And that's okay because that is your right. That is fine. Just know this, that if that is your choice, through those choices then, what will happen is you will be stuck in the vibrations that are limiting you in a non-growth capacity, that they're non-growth producing, and you're the one that's what? Suffering. And you can remain in your suffering state. That's your choice. And you know, and some people choose that. You ever been around people who choose to remain in a suffering state? Everything is a problem. Everything is, well, and after a while, it's like, oh, Lord. But they're getting something inwardly by being in that state. So you could do that. Or you could shift and figure out, well, what is the state that I want to have? How do I want to move myself out of this vibration? It might be that maybe I do have to bless you and release you. I bless you and release you with love, right? I'm going to do it with love, but maybe that is a choice I have to make. Or maybe I'll even take an even higher one to try to understand what is it that is precipitating this conflict. Why is my spirit vexed? My spiritual teacher used to say, if you're disturbed, it's because you're disturbable. And, you know. So what is it in me that needs to be rooted and grounded so that I'm not going to be swayed and tossed and turned by anything you do or say? That I'm grounded in my own truth. That I can offer you love and light in the midst of whatever your shenanigans and your mess is. And that I could even let you have your mess and bless you in the process. Right? Not with anger and, you know, but I can just bless you and let you be. So it really is up to me. And I can look at what are the insights that I'm gaining. Let me use these lessons. Let me see what's for my soul's benefit. Because when I am coming from a place of conscious awareness of who I am, then I can magnify the light. I can magnify the love. I can take the higher road. I can be, you know, that wonderful good friend and good person. I was reading the scripture this morning about the opportune friend, the friend who went to his friend and knocked on the door at midnight because a friend had visited him. And he didn't have any food in the house to give his friend. So he went to his friend, his other friend, at midnight, knocked on the door, and said, look, my friend just came to visit. I don't have anything to give him. Can you give me something? And that friend said, look, it's midnight. My kids are all in the bed. We tired. I can't come down to give you anything. Okay? But the friend knocked and knocked and knocked and knocked. And the scripture says, even if the person who's the friend forgets his friendship, he's going to get up and give you what you need. Now, he's trying to teach through that parable, the parable of knocking and giving and receiving. To everyone that knocks, receives, and everyone who asks, you know, gets. But I love the idea that it was a friend who had a friend coming to visit who goes to a friend. And so sometimes we have to look at the nature of our friendships. Do I get up in the middle of the night for a friend who's in need of something so that they can be a friend to someone else, maybe not to me? And then how often do I really go to my friends? I looked at myself, how often? Very seldom I do, but I will. But most of the time I think, well, I can do this alone. I'll bear this burden. When actually a friend could lighten my load. But I may not want to go because I might not want you to see the level of my what? Neediness. You might then what? Judge me or deny me. But if I'm really willing to be open, sometimes you have to allow yourself to be befriended, right? To receive friendship as well as to give friendship. Because how we relate to our friends tells a lot about ourselves. And if I'm not willing to reveal myself to you, then I move into a place of inauthenticity. I can't be authentic. Maybe I don't feel good. Maybe I don't feel safe. And so I start trying to struggle and do this thing alone. Maybe I won't even go to God in prayer because, you know, No. Open up the heart. Open up yourself so that you can be present to yourself. You've got to be a friend to yourself sometimes. Sometimes we're not even friends with our own selves, right? You got to be patient and kind and loving to who? To you. Be supportive and affirming of you. When you make a mistake, you want to forgive others. Do you forgive yourself? Be a friend to yourself. Encourage yourself. Lift yourself up, right? Do those things that you would do for others. Do them for yourselves as well. Because if you can't do it for yourself, you're not going to be able to really do it for another. So befriend yourself. Friendship is so important for us to recognize. Now, there's a scripture that says this, and I had to think about this level of friendship. It says in John 15, greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. And I began to think, whoa, I'm not quite sure who I'm going to lay my life down for. With family, it's different. A mother, a father, whatever, is going to do what they do for their children. Maybe even someone who's serving, you know, in the military, and they've got their buddy, and they're taught, you don't leave your friend, your partner. So maybe in those cases, but really, would I be willing to lay down my life for a friend? Now, some people have had that experiences. There's instinct. They just step in front, and they save the other person. All that is well and good. But we have to recognize how much of myself am I committing to being open enough to love at such a deep level that the only thing that is important to me is that I love this soul and I love the spirit of the living God. Because God's essence of love has been placed in us for a reason. One, so that we can always follow the commandment which Jesus said. He said what? Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, thy mind, thy soul, and love what? Thyself as who? Thy neighbor. That's the whole, we love so that we can love God, we can love ourselves, and we love our neighbor. So how are you befriending God? How are you befriending yourself? And how are you befriending the sacred other out here? There's some powerful thoughts, some quotes I have found that I love on friendship, and I just wanted to share this before I wind down, but there's a few of them that I thought were so powerful. This one says, it's on friendship, a mirror reflects a man's face, but what he is really is shown by the kind of friends he chooses. Ain't that right? So we need to choose wisely, because people not just look at you, they're going to look at the friends that you choose. Who you hanging out with? The company you keep? Mm-hmm. Will be the company that reveals your character. Then it says this, a friend is one who knows who you are, understands where you've been, accepts what you have become, and still gently allows you to grow. Now that's when you have a friend. See, I've got some friends that have seen me at my best, and they have seen me at my worst. But they allow me the space to do what? To grow and to unfold. All of us are looking for that. Here's one that says this. Two persons cannot long be friends if they cannot forgive each other's little failings. If you're going to hold your friends to such a high standard, you won't have very many friends. Because all of us are going to do things that are in need of what? Forgiveness. But you know, there are people, one little slight, and that's it, done. There are people who come to the church and somehow or another they think I looked at them cross-eyed or maybe I forgot to speak or something, I didn't smile or maybe I was whatever, and boom, they're going out the door. Wow. So we have to forgive each other's little failings. This one says, the glory of friendship is not the outstretched hand, nor the kindly smile, nor the joy of companionship. It's the spiritual inspiration that comes to one when he discovers that someone else believes in him and is willing to trust him with their friendship. Now, isn't it, don't you, when you find somebody who believes in you and who affirms you, because we all want to have that, right? We want to have that. Someone who believes in us. And this one says, the comfort, the inexpressible comfort of feeling safe with a person, having neither to weigh thoughts nor measure the words, but pouring them all out just as they are, chaff and grain together, certain that a faithful hand will take and sift them, keep what is worth keeping, and with the breath of kindness, blow away the rest. That's a friend. Do you feel safe? See, a good friend is somebody you can feel safe with and safe enough to show them who you are. Not the false persona, but who you are. And all of it, the good, the bad, what, and the ugly. And a good friend has the ability to take it all, keep what is worth keeping, and let the rest go, because they can see into your soul. It's powerful. And it says, in the degree that we become friends to the highest and best within us, do we become friends to all? Befriend what is highest and best in you, and befriend the all. It is easy enough to be friendly to one's friends, but to befriend the one who regards himself as your enemy is the quintessence of all religion. The other is merely business. Even Jesus said, well, what good is that? You know, okay, yeah, you could do all that to your friends, but what it's what you do with those who you perceive to be your enemies that will tell the real character of your nature. You know, that's really deep. That's the high road there. And it says, oh, I love one says, where's the one about visiting? I like that one. Well, there's ones that say that friends will make good visitors, but that's a, don't let them come stay too long. Oh, it says it's easier to visit friends than to live with them. Right? But that's okay, because if you live with them, they're going to teach you something. They're going to teach you something about that. And then it says there's a magnet in your heart that will attract true friends. That magnet is unselfishness, thinking of others first. When you learn to live for others, they will live for you. That's powerful. When you learn to live for others. And then this one says here, when we honestly ask ourselves which person in our lives mean the most to us, we often find that it is those who, instead of giving advice, solutions, or cures, have chosen rather to share pain and to touch our wounds with a warm and tender hand. The friend who can be silent with us in a moment of despair or confusion, who can stay with us in an hour of grief and bereavement, who can tolerate not knowing, not curing, not healing, and face with us the reality of perhaps our temporary powerlessness, that is a friend who cares. Just being, sometimes I don't need you to try to fix it. I don't need you to try to heal me. I don't need you to just tell me what I should have done. I just need you to be present with me. Because God and I are going to work it out. We'll figure it out, but I need a friend to be present with me. All right? And then it says, this is the one I like, one of my, this is from Gloria Naylor from the Women of Brewster's Place. She says, sometimes being a friend means mastering the art of timing. There is a time for silence, a time to let go and allow people to hurl themselves into their own destiny, and a time to prepare to pick up the pieces when it's all over. Don't you love that? Because sometimes we gotta have our lessons. And the lessons we learn may be hard. Sometimes, you know, your children are going to hurl themselves into their destiny, and you must let that happen. And then be there to pick up the pieces when it's all over. That's what a friend is. That's what true love is there. And the last one says, wherever we are, it is our friends that make our world. I love this concept of family and friends, because it really lets me know that when I allow myself to be a friend, where do I need to be a friend? To myself or to others? And I want to make these conscious connections. I want to commit to being present, not only to them, but to myself and to God. If I'm present to God first, then I can be present to myself, my own needs and flaws and faults. And when I can be present to myself and accepting and loving of myself, I can be what? Present to you. Accepting and loving of you. This is God's way. This is God's way. So every encounter is a holy one because they are gifts from God to make us whole. Every encounter is a holy one. It is a gift of God. So just turn to someone and thank them for blessing you with their presence. Just say, thank you for blessing me with your presence. Thank you for blessing me with your presence. Every encounter is a holy one. Blessings and namaste. Blessings. Blessings, blessings, blessings. Blessings.